Yes, indeed. We've got a very special guest today, Dr. Thomas Hibbs, who, in addition to being the president of the University of Dallas, is also a professor of philosophy. So we're in the same department. We both have a boss named Dr. Chad England, who's the chair of the philosophy department. So what I thought it might be interesting to do, as our regular listeners know, we tend to focus on particular virtues and connect them to disciplines or other elements of the university. And I thought, given Dr. Hibbs's role, it would be appropriate to talk about the university as a whole and liberal education in general. But before we get there, I thought it would be of some real value to talk about your progress to this point. And in particular, if we could back up, you're a philosopher. You were an English major, but you got your advanced degrees in philosophy. And what was it about philosophy that led you to really devote your life to its study?
So I got interested in philosophy actually through literature, and was studying in high school, and then early before I transferred to the University of Dallas, was studying literature and got interested in language, and then the kinds of poets I was reading, Homer, Dante, others are all poets who raise the big questions. And that led me into philosophy. And it was really growing up and starting to pose for myself as a young adult Catholic who had been raised Catholic, who had gone to Catholic schools. I spent 2 years in college before coming to the University of Dallas at the University of Maryland, went to a small Catholic high school outside of D.C. University of Maryland is a very large, very secular, even in those times, university. I think I had three faculty members my first year and a half there who were avowed atheists and not mean people. In fact, one of them I still stay in touch with, who teaches philosophy at the University of North Carolina now. But it was the first time I had encountered atheism, and it kind of shook me at a deep level and made me wonder why I believed what I believed, what were the grounds for that belief, and then if I had certain beliefs that I had not hitherto taken all that seriously as a Catholic, what would it mean to take those beliefs seriously? Mm-hmm. And so philosophy became a really urgent matter for me in ways that that it had never been before.
So you went on, you completed a PhD in philosophy at the University of Notre Dame, and you started a teaching career. And there are other things philosophers can do with a PhD. In fact, CIA is one of the biggest employees of people with PhDs in philosophy because of the analytical skills and language background that we often receive. But what attracted you to teaching? What led you to devote the early part of your career, especially to teaching? And you still teach now, I know.
That also goes back to high school, when I had a couple of teachers who, before I was even aware of deeper level academic interests, who, like the professors I ended up having at the University of Dallas, were people who, wanted the students to know that they had intellects and that they should use them, and that they might even enjoy using their intellects, and they might love learning. And so when I went through this kind of crisis period early at the University of Maryland, I realized I was kind of stretching back to some of the teachers I'd had in high school, at a Catholic high school, and they modeled for me the life of inquiry combined with the life of faith. Mm-hmm. And when I came to the University of Dallas, I had the most remarkable teachers that I've ever had anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so encountering faculty at the University of Dallas who were deeply learned, many of them great scholars, but who saw their primary calling as the classroom and the formation of students outside of the classroom, I discovered very quickly that I had a calling to the intellectual life. And that was very much for me a combination of the love of learning and the love of teaching. And had some opportunities before I even left UD when I was a master's student here to do some kind of guest lecturing and leading of discussions with undergrads. Really loved that. And so, I went into graduate school knowing that I wanted to study Thomas Aquinas, that I wanted to write in philosophy and theology, but most of all that I wanted to teach. Mm-hmm. And for me to this day, my wife and I are team teaching a class at the University of Dallas, the philosophy and the ethical life for first semester freshmen. We taught together at Baylor for the past 10 years, a class on friendship. But that experience in the classroom, particularly with freshmen, and seeing their minds open up as they're learning to read something carefully, as they're seeing levels in a book that, on their first read they didn't get, that's still the most enjoyable experience that I have. And then that sense of shared discovery in the classroom is, I think, for every teacher, that moment when a conversation has seemingly derailed, and then suddenly somebody asks a question or makes a response to a question or points us to a text, and suddenly everybody's seeing something together. Mm-hmm. Those moments are, I think, what you live for as a teacher, and still the kind of thing that that I find deeply inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, me too. It really is a delight to teach, and so many of our students remark on the experience they've had with faculty members at the University of Dallas. It's without a doubt one of the difference makers of the education that we provide. So I'm guessing you didn't have in your mind that you would be a university administrator when you were setting out in the early part of your career, and yet you found yourself one, and you did a stint as chair of the philosophy department at Boston College, and then served as dean of the Honors College, the founding dean at Baylor University, and now as president. So how does your love for philosophy, your love for teaching, for that engagement with the students and the kind of particular sort of friendship that a classroom experience like that fosters, how does that relate to your work as a leader in Catholic higher education?
Well, to start out with the first comment you made, which is true, that when I was an undergraduate and a graduate student at the University of Dallas, I never imagined that I would go into administration. I did imagine in a kind of dream world coming back to UD to teach amongst the legendary faculty whom I'd had the privilege of studying with. But I think there were two things for me that led to this path in administration. One was the experience of the kind of community that the University of Dallas was for me. So it was a community that united intellectual, moral, and spiritual formation, and that also was united around a shared vision that was focused on a curriculum that's Western classics and Catholic intellectual tradition, and faculty and students who the working supposition was that you had an inheritance here that you should be enormously grateful for, that you could spend the rest of your life trying to exhaust and never come close to exhausting, that was a constant source of wonder. And so I think everywhere I went after leaving the University of Dallas, I was looking for that kind of academic community. That is one that has a shared sense of intellectual, moral, and spiritual formation, and also where you have faculty and students and a curriculum sharing the same goals of a kind of love of learning in community. And so as I got further along, I had opportunities at Boston College to be an undergraduate director, to be involved in faculty hiring. And I think at each stage, what I was trying to do was to, in a sense, recreate the sort of community that I had at the University of Dallas. And so that gradually led to greater leadership opportunities. And then, as you know, because you've had a similar path yourself from starting out in teaching and moving into administration, if you find that you get into administration and you like certain parts of it, perhaps to your own surprise, which mm-hmm. was a surprise to me, then, you know, the opportunities grow. And I think what I discovered that I didn't know until I got into administration was that I liked building things mm-hmm. and I liked having opportunities in academia to build. There aren't a lot of opportunities because you got faculty who are tenured, you got curricula that are pretty set. But my move from Boston College to Baylor was an opportunity to build a brand new honors college, and then the opportunity to come and work with great administrative teachers like you to come back to UD and to build on a great foundation. That's one of the things that I discovered that I like doing mm-hmm. that I had no idea about when I was here as a student.
Yeah, yeah. No, there are some elements of administration that I enjoy too, and the building, I mean, the entrepreneurial elements are mm-hmm. certainly one of the most enjoyable. There's also, when you see people not doing a very good job, sometimes it can inspire you to say, you know, I think maybe I could do a better job.
Yeah, you know? I think one of the moments that occurred for me is it being in one of an endless list of department meetings where you think, this is not focused, it's going on way too long. If I were running this meeting, we'd be done.
Right.
And that's if you find yourself doing that as an academic, you may be headed for an administrative
yeah, watch
career.
Out. Watch out. So let's shift gears a little bit. You know, another really important element of your job is articulating why we provide the kind of education that we do, and you've already done that in a variety of ways thus far in this conversation. But within the broader cultural spectrum, one often encounters complaints about higher education and liberal arts education in particular. And we're convinced that this education is valuable in and of itself. There's also a mountain of evidence that has been growing about the worldly successes that ensue from the kind of education that we provide. But what would you say to those parents who are considering where to send their children? Most of our listeners will certainly be concerned about the Catholic character of the University of Dallas, and we have a well-deserved reputation for having a strong Catholic character. But what about the liberal arts side of this? When they might be worried that unless their son or daughter has a very pragmatically oriented education, they won't be well prepared for the future.
So great question. You know, one of the things that about a year ago when I was contemplating applying for the position at the University of Dallas and started to do some research and realized that our placement rates of students, medical and law school, well above 80%, placement rates for students getting jobs or being in graduate school not long after graduation in the mid-90s. I mean, these are these data points are most schools can't come close to these.
Right.
So we're doing really well at that, and yet our school is not primarily set up to do that. It's a byproduct, a very healthy and happy byproduct of what we're doing. And the other great thing about the University of Dallas is that it's a place that has remained true to its founding vision as a seriously Catholic and Orthodox Catholic institution and its commitment to liberal education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on college campuses across the country, people talk about liberal education, but if you ask them what they mean by it, they really have no idea what they mean by this. They'll give you very vague statements. We have a rich idea of what we mean by liberal education, and the word education means to be led forth, and liberal means is connected to the word for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So it means to be led forth into freedom. And if you're going to spend 4 years taking an intensive set of academic courses, you should come out more free mm-hmm. intellectually and morally and socially than when you went in.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes back to our combination that I mentioned earlier of combining intellectual, moral, and spiritual formation.
Right.
A lot of great things going on in student life and campus ministry around the moral and spiritual formation of our students, very active liturgical life for students, devotion to the Eucharist. But our students are also getting at a deep level an opportunity to investigate in a Catholic context with Catholic faculty the most important questions.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, parents are really concerned about the success markers, and we've got those, as I just mentioned. But I think if you scratch the surface there, parents are also worried about their children and what's going to happen to them as people, whether they're successful or not. And we know that a lot of people in our society develop difficulties in their success.
Mm-hmm.
So what prepares you beyond success in a career? What prepares you to be an adult human being?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the University of Dallas is really good at taking people who are adolescents, still children in many ways, and producing young adults out of them in 4 years. Our Rome program, where they go as a sophomore, where they get to encounter the great culture of Rome, both in its Western origins and its Catholic development and tradition over the years. It's also an opportunity for our sophomores to develop a degree of independence,
mm-hmm.
With great faculty and staff who were there to keep them from getting into any serious trouble. But it's an opportunity for them to develop, to have a certain level of freedom that's in a context where we've got guideposts for them, and we've got folks who counsel them and support them intellectually, morally, and spiritually. They come back as juniors or as second semester sophomores as adults, mm-hmm. many of them.
Right.
So they've had this experience not just of being off traveling through Europe by themselves, but by going with a cohort in a curriculum that we set up, with trips that we set up. It's really the best developmental curricular element in the country, mm-hmm. I think, our Rome program and the way it works. So I think we do a terrific job of meeting the desire that parents and students have to be successful after they leave UD, but we're also going to make them into young adults who are mature,
mm-hmm.
and who have friendships that are going to last a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that education for freedom is really a key component, and I think it's often overlooked. We tend to have a negative view of freedom, right? So freedom is a kind of lack of restriction, but there is that element to our education, right? There's a liberation from our passions, but ultimately, if you go back to the Augustinian notion of freedom as being connected to a kind of subjection, right? He says, herein lies your freedom, subjection to the truth, in the second book of On Free Choice of the Will.
Exactly.
That is really liberating, right? And you do see that in our students who come back from Rome. They're mature. They're also able to engage in inquiry at a much higher level. It's where the core curriculum that we provide really comes together, and they've made it their own. And then they move into the majors, and they discipline their minds in ways that are very specific. And then there's a kind of freedom for whatever kind of career one might be stepping forth into. And one of the things we know about our graduates is by the time they're on their second or third position, they tend to be moving way up in the leadership track wherever
right.
they are because of the education that we provide. But more significantly, when I meet with groups of alumni, and I know you've had this experience too, and we might engage a text that we read in the core or some timely topic, they are really living a life in which ideas of significance continue to have a real hold upon them. They're still wrestling with many of the questions that they wrestled with when they were undergraduates. Their learning doesn't come to an end when they step outside right. our door.
Right. And so there's that. You could talk about negative and positive freedom, right? Freedom from external restraint, and then freedom for. We're really good in our culture at freedom from. Mm-hmm. That's our great passion in America today. It's to be free from things. But if your only message and your only goal is to be free from things, you've got a pretty isolated, empty life,
mm-hmm.
right? What are you living for? Who are you living with? And I think our curriculum, our culture at the University of Dallas is about educating young people so that they're free for becoming spouses,
mm-hmm.
and becoming parents. They're free for service to the church, wherever they happen to find themselves. They're free for service to country.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that emphasis upon positive freedom, what are we living for,
mm-hmm.
is an element of our curriculum that universities as a whole today have simply abandoned.
Right, right.
And it's not a surprise that we have an epidemic of loneliness and isolation, not just among the elderly, but also among the young.
Yeah, well, that last point connects to some of the things you've talked about with respect to friendship and its role in education and its role after education, right? So there's a kind of freedom for, well, the spousal friendship, friendship with your children, but friendship with your peers in whatever walk of life one finds oneself. And people really are isolated and right. cut off. And oftentimes they don't know what to talk about. They don't know what to think about.
Yeah.
Right? We just distract ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know.
So I get asked a lot. I got asked this when I moved from Boston College to Baylor. What's the difference between the students and the community? And now people are already asking me about UD and Baylor and elsewhere. You know, one of the things that just dawned on me when I'm walking across our public areas, the mall and so forth, you do see students with phones. Everybody's got a phone. But I don't see students on their phones nearly as much as I have at other campuses.
Right.
Students, when they're in public spaces, are interacting with other students, with faculty, with you and me as mm-hmm. administrators. Many of them know who we are mm-hmm. And like to strike up conversations. There is an emphasis at the University of Dallas upon healthy public social relations. Mm-hmm. And I think in the long run, our students can read body language better than other students and interact as adults with other adults mm-hmm. in ways that are going to make them happier and more successful.
Yeah. No, I noticed that difference as well. And the snippets of conversation that I catch as I'm walking by sometimes are quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a text that you would suggest our listeners to take a look at that touches on at least some of the themes we've discussed today?
You know, I mean, we go back to Aristotle's books on friendship and the ethics a lot. You know, a great text that I read for the first time as an undergraduate here is this wonderful little essay by Joseph Pieper, mm-hmm. and Ignatius Press has a version of this on leisure, the basis of culture, mm-hmm. which is about the counter to the world of total work. What do we use our leisure time for? And that's yeah. for celebration, wonder, and religious ritual.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's a great text.